Mark Twain, The Pony Express, Sliced Bread, Walt Disney. These innovators and innovations are some of the most famous in our nation's history. Throughout this audio tour, you'll hear their stories and many other surprising tales of extraordinary adventures, ideas, and lives. Each found inspiration here, close to the very highway you're traveling on. On this drive, you'll learn about remarkable individuals and ideas that have defined and influenced our American culture and character. Welcome to Highway 36, the Way of American Genius. We hope you enjoyed this audio tour prepared for you by the Missouri Department of Transportation and the Missouri Highway 36 Heritage Alliance. Your journey will follow the Hannibal to St. Joseph line, the same path the First Missouri Railroad travelers took back in 1859. Along the way, you'll experience natural, cultural, and historic areas. You'll see farms nestled among rolling hills, charming small towns, and interesting museums. You'll travel the central part of the once-famous Pike Street Ocean-to-Ocean Highway, which at one time claimed to be the central and most direct route across the United States. Ultimately, you'll travel river to river, from Twain's boyhood home along the Mississippi to the Pony Express headquarters along the Missouri. So buckle up and open your mind to the genius that lay before you. St. Joseph is famously known as the place where the legendary Pony Express began and the life of the notorious outlaw Jesse James ended. Here in 1826, along the banks of the Missouri River, fur trader Joseph Rubidoux established the Blacksnake Hills Trading Post. A wise entrepreneur, he shrewdly situated his business on the edge of Indian Territory, where he could barter with local tribes for beaver pelts and other furs. His successful enterprise attracted the first settlers to these river bluffs, which allowed Rubidoux to eventually establish and design the city of St. Joseph. To this very day, Rubidoux's stature and importance is easily found, as several streets in downtown St. Joseph are named after his family members. For a better look, take I-229 North to Exit 7. Once there, you can enjoy the beautiful Missouri Riverwalk or stand on the banks of Lloyd's Branch, the street where Rubidoux first began business. To learn even more about Rubidoux and the natural history of the area, visit the Remington Nature Center, one of many places in St. Joseph that provide links to the past. The city is also home to 13 museums and has more than 50 listings on the National Register of Historic Places. You can enter downtown St. Joseph from Exit 6A on I-229 North or from the 10th Street exit on Highway 36 to visit the Pony Express Museum, Katie House Museum, and the residence where Jesse James breathed his last breath on April 3rd, 1882. Coincidentally, on the same date, April 3rd, but 22 years earlier in 1860, the genius of three men resulted in a faster way to communicate with people living hundreds of miles away. Alexander Majors, William H. Russell, and William B. Waddell launched the Pony Express, the quickest and most direct way to relay mail across Indian Territory to California. Riders successfully delivered the mail in 10 days, a huge improvement over the time it took ocean steamers or stagecoaches to deliver it. Today, you can stand at the doors of the stable where Johnny Fry left on the inaugural day, plus see in here, in an interactive panorama, the entire story of this amazing venture. As the crowd surrounded the stable that morning in 1860, Major M. Jeff Thompson, who would become the Confederate general known as the Swamp Fox, explained,
"This is a great day in the history of St. Joseph. For more than a decade, she's been the portal which passed the wagon trains to the Great West. Now she's become a connecting link between the extremes of the continent. For the first time in the history of America, mail will go by an overland route from east to west. Citizens of St. Joseph, I bid you 3 cheers for the Pony Express. 3 cheers for the first overland passage of the United States Mail.
At the Penny House, you can see the headquarters of the Pony Express and get a clearer picture about all the incredible people who called St. Joseph home, like natives Walter Cronkite and Jane Wyman. You can read about Eugene Field's famous Lover's Lane while you explore a replica street of Old St. Joe, or get the story of the St. Joseph original, Aunt Jemima Pancake. The Penny House also offers visitors a chance to step inside the home where the outlawed Jesse James was shot in the back by a member of his own gang in order to collect a ransom from then-Governor Crittenden. Jesse's stories can be found all across the state. For example, just north of the city of Cameron, off of Interstate 35 on Highway 6, you can visit more sites related to this infamous Missouri outlaw. In Winston, you can visit the Winston Historical Society and Rock Island Depot Museum, which houses items related to the James gang and their next-to-last train robbery. A few miles further east on Highway 6 in Gallatin is the historic Davies County Rotary Jail and Sheriff's Residence, one of only 6 Rotary Jails ever built in the United States, and the place where Frank James, brother of Jesse, was imprisoned toward the end of his outlaw career. Also in downtown St. Joseph is the National Military Heritage Museum. Inside is a wide collection of uniforms, weapons, medals, vehicles, and exhibits honoring all branches of the U.S. military. Visitors can walk inside a dark World War I observational trench while the surrounding sounds of explosions and a binocular view video of field combat transports them into battle. Visitors can climb aboard a Huey helicopter or spend a moment of silence next to a piece of the former World Trade Center. A trip down Frederick Avenue will take you to historic Mount Morris Cemetery. Established in 1851, Mount Morris Cemetery has an entire street of ornate mausoleums and is the final resting place of 3 state governors, notable early entrepreneurs, and wealthy citizens of St. Joseph. Down Frederick Avenue is the Albright Kemper Museum of Art, where you can enjoy American art at its finest. Just a few doors down at the St. Joseph Museum complex, you can view an expansive collection of Native American artifacts. Tour the Black Archives, which is an African American museum, or visit the Glory Psychiatric Museum, considered to be one of the 50 most unusual museums in America. There you can see primitive devices used to restrain and calm patients, with other intriguing scenes and stories, like when 1,000 metal objects were found in one patient's stomach. If you're a football fan visiting the area in July and August, you might want to stop by the Kansas City Chiefs Summer Training Camp, located on the campus of Missouri Western State University. The Riverside Road exit on Highway 36, as you're leaving St. Joseph, will take you to the university and a huge indoor training center where fans can watch their favorite players prepare for the upcoming season. Along your journey today, you will travel through strong faith-based communities which include Amish, Mormons, Catholics, and Christians. A trip north off of Highway 36 will take you to the first of these communities. Off of Highway 71, 45 miles north in Nottoway County, is Conception Abbey, a Roman Catholic monastery of the Swiss American Congregation of the Benedictine Confederation. This monastery was elevated to an abbey in 1881. The community includes monks who celebrate the Eucharist and liturgy of the hours daily, and whose staff and administer Conception Seminary College. Monks also serve as parish priests and hospital chaplains in the Roman Catholic Diocese of Kansas City St. Joseph and other dioceses. The Basilica of the Immaculate Conception is the heart of Conception Abbey. The monks gather here 6 times a day for prayer and mass. Renovated in 1999, it contains one of the world's best collections of Buranese art, exemplified in the murals that adorn its walls. The murals were painted by Benedictine monks trained in Buron, Germany in the late 19th century. The monks of Conception Abbey praise God through the humanities. Some are writers who practice the art of calligraphy and design Christian greeting cards. A few are musicians who blend their voices and instruments in praise. Others are sculptors, painters, woodworkers, or historians. And at least one is an avid astronomer who, for those who stay here on retreat, will eagerly set up his telescope for you to view the celestial heavens in the rural sky. The monks welcome all guests to stop by their monastery for the day and invite people to stay overnight for one of their spiritual retreats or workshops they offer. Visitors can also stop by their prairie house, where the purchases of their handcrafted Christian art, cards, and other items will help support their abbey and home. North of Highway 36 along Interstate 29, you can travel through the lush hills of northwest Missouri. Wind-blown soil from ancient glaciers formed the bluff along this highway, and today, giant turbines harness this wind power, turning it into electricity for thousands of people across the state. Wind Capital Group, managed by Thomas Carnahan, son of the late Governor Mel Carnahan, operates Missouri's first commercial wind farm. This impressive farm was built in Gentry County, about 25 miles north of Highway 36 on Route 169, north of King City. 27 turbines, three of which produce electricity specifically for the city of Columbia, turn their football-filled length blades above the corn stalk. Wind Capital, along with business partner John Deere, planted 24 turbines on farmland in Conception and 24 more in Rockport. The city of Rockport itself owns a set of four turbines through partnership with Wind Capital Group and John Deere. Rockport, with a population of approximately 1,300 people, is the first city in the United States to be 100% wind energy powered. The energy produced by these wind turbines is sold to Associated Electric Cooperatives Incorporated, Missouri's rural electric cooperative. Rockport's neighbor, the city of Tarsio, also has a 72-turbine energy farm owned by the Spanish wind energy company, Iberdrola. These northwest prairies are the best location in the state for this conservation of wind energy, and over the years, this ideal area will be most important for clean and innovative ways to keep the lights on in Missouri. These winds not only give power to the people, they also give light to thousands of ducks and geese. And even some bald eagles that travel north and south across Highway 36 throughout the season. Miles north of St. Joseph, off of I-29, is Squaw Creek National Wildlife Refuge. The refuge was established in 1935 by President Franklin D. Roosevelt as a feeding and breeding ground for migratory birds and other wildlife. The refuge resides among 7,350 acres along the eastern edge of the Missouri River floodplain, the impressive lowest hills, and some of the last remnants of native North American prairie. The refuge protects a portion of a vast historic wetland basin that contains large marshes with meandering creeks that have since been straightened for the purposes of agricultural drainage. It hosts 301 bird species, 33 mammal species, and 35 reptile and amphibian species. The 10-mile auto tour gets you up close and personal with muskrat mounds, thousands of waterfowl and wading birds, and even a few eagle nests. The Missouri Department of Conservation also manages some of the best wetlands in the state in this northern region. You can stop by Bob Brown and Nottoway Valley Conservation Areas near Squaw Creek or at Pony Express Conservation Area just ahead, 5 miles north on Highway 33. As you travel between St. Joseph and Cameron, keep your eyes to the skies as perhaps you may see some ducks, geese, a great blue heron, or even a bald eagle. As you drive east toward Cameron, you have the opportunity to sample some of the best chocolate milk in the world, and to see how the Chateau family has turned the process of getting a glass of milk into a delicious and educational tour at the Chateau Milk Company. This family dairy farm has been around since the mid-1800s. You could take the 90-minute tour of their farm, or just pick up treats for the road from their country store, all just 4 miles south of Highway 36 on Highway 33 in Osborne. In 2003, Barbara and Leroy Sacco took their family farm and created the Sacco Milk Company. The cows they raise are the same ones who provide the milk they process and turn into a variety of dairy products. Hundreds of people tour their farm every year, and while you're there, you feel like part of the family. On the tour, you can pet the baby calves, milk a cow, tour the processing plant, see how they fill their trademark glass bottles, and the best part, sample their ice cream, butter, strawberry milk, or eggnog. Sacco Milk Company has created a variety of milk flavors, including banana, root beer, and strawberry, and in 2009, their chocolate milk was voted by the World Dairy Expo as one of the top three in the world. In an age when family farms are slowly disappearing, Barbara and Leroy Sacco have kept their ancestral farm alive by welcoming visitors onto their property, inviting them to try their hand at a few daily chores, and creating a business that exemplifies that milk doesn't come from the back room of a store. They continue to expand the family business and recently began producing cheese from their resident cows. You can look for their milk in their famous glass jugs in Kansas City, St. Joseph, or maybe even at a local convenience store along your Highway 36 dream. Just south of Highway 36 on Highway 33 is the hometown of a former U.S. president, at least according to the people of Plattsburgh, Missouri. No, it's not Harry Truman, it's David Rice Atchison. Sure, history books may not list a President Atchison, but many from this northern Missouri town believe Mr. Atchison was the United States president for one full day in 1849. Here's the theory. Atchison was president pro tempore of the U.S. Senate, which at that time meant he was third in line to become U.S. president. Today, the third in line is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. President-elect Zachary Taylor was to be sworn in on Sunday, March 4, 1849, but he didn't, and neither did Vice President-elect Millard Fillmore. Both men refused to take the oath because the ceremony fell on the Sabbath, and because the term of the outgoing Vice President, George Dallas, ended the same Sunday, March 4th at noon, then technically, Mr. Atchison was the United States President for a 24-hour period until Taylor was officially sworn in on Monday. So, what did Atchison accomplish during his one-day reign? Not much. In fact, Atchison said he spent most of Sunday and joked that he at least did no harm. While his name doesn't appear on any list of U.S. presidents, his name lives on in the town of Atchison, Kansas, and ultimately the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railroad. You can learn more about Atchison at the Clinton County Courthouse. A statue of him stands out front with a plaque explaining his short presidency, and on the lower level of the courthouse, you can learn more about this famous man and his famous day in Missouri history. Back on Highway 36, you'll see a sign designating this route as the VFW, or Veterans of Foreign Wars Highway. Northern Missouri is proud to honor our veterans and celebrate the rich military history found throughout the area. When you reach the intersection of Highway 36 and Interstate 35, you're entering the crossroads of the nation, Cameron, Missouri. Cameron was once known as the crossroads of the railway for steam-powered trains puffing along the Hannibal to St. Joseph line and for other trains heading north from Kansas City. Plans for the Hannibal to St. Joseph Railroad, the first railroad across the state, came from two Cameron engineers. In 1859, the railroad was completed, and it was because of this railroad that St. Joseph was chosen for the site of the Pony Express headquarters. This railroad is the reason why Cameron and several other towns along Highway 36 came into existence and prospered. You can learn more about Cameron's important role in Missouri transportation history at the Cameron Historical Society and Depot Museum, located at the corner of 2nd and Walnut Street. The museum chronicles the history of Cameron, the construction of the railroad, and the days when Cameron was a railroad crossroads with three stations and 44 trains passing through daily. The if you get a chance to pass through Cameron on a Thursday night in the summer, head to downtown's McCorkle Park. That's where you'll hear the historic Cameron City Band play in the Thomas Price Pavilion. This band was formed in 1866 and remains one of the few bands in America that's supported by a city band tax passed in 1929. Believe it or not, the band was once featured in Ripley's Believe It or Not. Plus, McCorkle Park also includes a fireman's memorial displaying a 1929 Studebaker fire truck and the Blarney Stone, which honors Cameron's Irish ancestry. Just 8 miles south of Cameron, off of Interstate 35, is a 300-foot-long wooden footbridge people can walk across at Wallace State Park. The park was established in 1932 as part of President Roosevelt's Works Progress Administration. The 501-acre park offers 4 campgrounds, hiking trails, swimming, and fishing. Just about 5 miles east of Cameron on Highway 36, you'll see a sign that says Far West. It's where another devoted religious community lived, but are now gone. Far West was once the headquarters for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. If you take Highway D south for about 7 miles, you'll see the cornerstone of their temple, a monument describing their story and powerful faith, and the area where this staunch community once existed. In the 1830s, thousands of Mormons immigrated to this area around Highway 36 between present-day Cameron and Chillicothe. In 1830, Joseph Smith Jr., founder of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, led his followers to Independence, Missouri. Latter-day Saints began to settle in Jackson County to build up this city of Zion. Unfortunately, as large numbers of Mormons moved into the area, Missouri settlers did not welcome them. It was believed that the Mormon community was a control threat for their area. Locals began to harass the newcomers, and in October of 1833, anti-Mormon vigilantes forced the Mormons out of Jackson County and up north to new colonies along present-day Highway 36. In an effort to calm the friction between the settlers and Mormons, the Missouri legislature designated Caldwell County specifically for Mormon settlement. In 1836, Joseph Smith Jr. brought his followers to Far West and began constructing the town that he had hoped for in Independence. It was here that he changed the name of the church from the Church of Christ to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thousands of Mormon members followed their faith to this town, but as they arrived, settler mob attacks began escalating. In 1838, after Mormons confronted a militia they mistakenly believed was an anti-Mormon mob, Governor Milburn Boggs ordered the Mormons expelled from the state, or, if necessary, to be exterminated. Only 2 years after Joseph Smith brought his people to Far West, they were forced to leave again, this time to a new colony in Nauvoo, Illinois. Nowhere was this order more impactful than at the Hans Mill Colony, established the same year as Far West, which was located south of Highway 36 along Shoal Creek. On October 30, 1838, an angry mob stormed the colony and killed 18 Mormon men and boys. 14 of the bodies were buried in an unfinished well. Today, the mills, pond, blacksmith shop, and well have all vanished, but a historical marker recalls what should not be forgotten. Six miles north of Far West on Highway 13 in Gallatin was Adam Andy Alman, another Mormon community of nearly 1,000 people. This community, too, left in the massive exodus of nearly 8,000 church members who had come here searching for peace, but instead found violence. In 1944, this land was donated to the Latter-day Saints Church. Historic markers, situated on a beautiful scenic overlook, tell the story of these faithful followers. Upon leaving Missouri, Joseph Smith said, "We have been driven time after time, and that without cause. Smitten again and again, and that without provocation. Until we have proved the world with kindness, and the world has proved us that we have no designs against any man or set of men, that we injure no man, that we are peaceable with all men, minding our own business and our business only. We have suffered our rights and our liberties to be taken from us. We have not avenged ourselves of those wrongs, yet we have yielded peacefully to all these things. We have not complained at the great God. We murmured not, but peacefully left all and retired into the back country and the broad and wild prairies and the barren and desolate plains, and there commenced anew. We made the desolate places to bud and blossom as the rose. Today, you can stop at any of these sites, read their stories, and look out onto the scenic hills of Northwest Missouri to reflect on a community devoted to their founder and their faith. Head is Hamilton, a city that tells the story of a famous rags-to-riches entrepreneur who was born here, started his first business here, and became one of the greatest retail chain geniuses in the country. James Taft Penny, better known as J.C. Penny, was born here in 1875, only 20 years after the founding of the town. The seventh of 12 children, he was expected at an early age to do his part to financially support the family. By age 10, he had already begun nurturing his entrepreneurial roots by earning wages selling pigs, running errands, and collecting and reselling items. His early family days here in Hamilton built the foundation for his business practices later in life. He believed that respecting and honoring the customer was of the utmost importance. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This golden rule was the code of business ethics that was the foundation for Penny's stores. The first chain of stores he managed in 1902 went by that very name. Penny said,
"In setting up a business under the name and meaning of the golden rule, I was publicly binding myself in my business relations to a principle which had been a real and intimate part of my family upbringing. Our idea was to make money and build business through serving the community with fair dealing and honest values. Courteous treatment will make a customer a walking advertisement."
In 1912, Penny changed the name of the stores to the one we recognize today. That year, there were 34 J.C. Penny stores in the western United States. Penny continued his active involvement in managing the company and its stores until 1946. Even after his retirement, he remained as honorary chairman until his death at age 95 in 1971. Penny was an inspiration and model for future retail moguls. For example, in 1940, during a visit to a store in Des Moines, Iowa, he trained a young Sam Walton how to wrap packages with a minimal amount of ribbon. Penny never forgot his roots in Hamilton either. Over the years, he would often return to help finance buildings such as the first library, the shoe factory, and the high school. Rather than coming home with a superstar attitude, he would visit stores and sometimes humbly pick up a broom and help sweep up, or spend time helping customers, thereby exemplifying that golden rule that made him a genius in his profession. You can learn more about Penny at the J.C. Penny Museum and Home in downtown Hamilton. Here you can see some of his personal items, early J.C. Penny store memorabilia, and learn more about his incredible contributions to American retail. At the intersection of Highway 35th and Highway 65, you'll come to Chillicothe. Chillicothe was incorporated in 1855. It is a Shawnee Indian word meaning big town where we live, our big town. And this big town where close to 10,000 people live today is a progressive community with plenty of retail, lodging, and dining options to entice visitors, with rich stories to tell on every corner. Art brings history alive at Chillicothe as more than 20 larger-than-life historic murals brighten the historic downtown district. Each mural celebrates a different aspect of history, such as the Chillicothe Business College, the invention of the Jenkins Haymaker, and the city's trained agricultural and commerce heritage. One of the most popular murals is the Home of Sliced Bread, Undoubtedly, you've heard the phrase, "This is the greatest thing since sliced bread." Well, it all started here in Chillicothe when the Chillicothe Baking Company took a chance on a young inventor. Otto Rohleder from Iowa invented the sliced bread machine. He enticed Chillicothe baker Frank Bench to use the invention and sell this new idea on his wholesale bakery shelves and to the local grocery stores he supplied. The first loaves were called sliced clean made bread. In the first few weeks, this new convenience increased sales by 2,000% in local grocery stores, making it a hit, and the rest, as they say, is history. Since its debut on July 7, 1928, sliced bread has been an invention that is synonymous with progress and innovation. That same spirit is evident in this progressive community today. The Grand River Historical Society Museum, located on Forest Drive, also interprets the area's history. The museum allows visitors to step up to an old railroad depot counter, just as several other passengers along this corridor once did, then take a trip inside to learn about the people of Livingston County. Also, there's an array of palate-pleasing options, including several charming downtown cafes and the Wabash Barbecue, an authentic Kansas City-style barbecue in a renovated train depot. It seems fitting to stop and have a sandwich on sliced bread, of course, here in Chillicothe. North of Chillicothe and Highway 190 is the town of Jamesport, the home of the largest Amish community in Missouri and the third faith-based community you'll travel by. From the east, you can take Highway 6 to Highway F, or from Chillicothe, you can take Highway 190 to downtown Jamesport. In the 1720s, the first group of Amish immigrated to America seeking religious tolerance and good farmland. Today, there are Amish settlements in 48 states and Canada. The Amish seek separation from the superficiality of society and from the impact of media. They live in modest homes on rural farms. Their peaceful lifestyle revolves around a close-knit family, the discipline of their faith, and the utilization of the land, all of which can be seen as you travel the rolling hills and countryside around Jamesport. While the Amish find it acceptable to travel in cars, they cannot own them. Cars may separate the closeness of family. Rather, horse-drawn vehicles take families to and from town. So, along these roads, travel slowly and respectfully. From their fields and their kitchens, they take the fruits of their labor and sell them directly from their own farms or from the stores in downtown Jamesport. Their products are often highly sought after for their impeccable sturdy craftsmanship and their delicious and interesting fruits, vegetables, and baked goods, not often found in regular grocery stores. Miles north of Chillicothe on Highway 65 is the city of Trenton. Just outside the city limits is Crowder State Park. The park includes more than 1,900 acres of rolling hills and deep ravines where visitors can hike, camp, picnic, fish, swim, or just relax beside an 18-acre lake. The park also includes the first permanent residence built in Grundy County, constructed in 1834 by William Thompson. Crowder is a commemorative park dedicated to the memory of Major General Enoch H. Crowder, an American military hero who grew up in Grundy County. General Crowder is most remembered for supervising the first military draft in the United States in 1917. As Provost Marshal of the Army, Crowder led the selective service and organized the draft of all American men who were between the ages of 18 and 30. He registered, classified, and inducted more than 2.8 million men during the war. Furthermore, the Highway 36 corridor includes the boyhood homes of six outstanding military generals. We'll talk about each one as we pass by their respective communities. Back in Trenton, the Grundy County Museum features a military room where campaign medals, uniforms, and weapons tell of the sacrifices made by our armed forces. The museum presents the life experiences of Trenton's top, from tools to technology to transportation. One of the most famous items is a wooden dugout canoe that was uncovered on the banks of the Thompson River, where it was buried for nearly 300 years. While the future General Clowder was tending to his boyhood chores in Trenton, another outstanding military general was also spending his boyhood days just down the road in Laclede, which sits about 21 miles east of Chillicothe. General John J. Pershing, a six-star general, moved to Laclede at the age of six and lived in Missouri until he left for West Point in 1882 at the age of 21. These two generals, born only 1 year apart and 45 miles away from each other, were destined to meet up later in life. Crowder was the supervisor of the first United States draft who supplied the troops to General Pershing, commander of the American forces in France. A New York Times article on September 18, 1918, quoted a letter from Crowder to Pershing saying,
"The nation responded yesterday with an enrollment which promises to exceed all estimates, thus ensuring an uninterrupted flow of manpower to the army under your command."
General John J. Black Jack Pershing was the only living officer in the history of the United States authorized to wear six stars with the rank of General of the Army. After graduating from West Point, Pershing's career spanned the globe. He commanded Buffalo Soldier cavalry troops in the last days of the Indian Wars, charged up San Juan Hill in the Spanish-American War, fought guerrilla wars during the Philippine Insurrection, and pursued Pancho Villa into Mexico. From the U.S. Army, Pershing received the Distinguished Service Cross and the Distinguished Service Medal, as well as campaign medals for the Indian Wars, Spanish-American War, Cuban Occupation, Philippine Service, Mexican Service, and World War I. In addition, he received 22 awards and decorations from foreign nations. In Laclede, you can take a guided tour through the two-story house where John J. Pershing spent his formative years. Next door at the site office, you can see paintings, photos, exhibits, and a 30-minute video on Pershing in World War I. You can also tour the Prairie Mound School Museum, where Pershing taught before he left for West Point. This museum reflects the many doorways that Pershing walked through in his lifetime, from the Prairie Mound School as a young adult to the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., where he passed away on July 15, 1948, at age 87. Pershing remains an American military symbol who also mentored the most famous names of our military's next generation, who include George C. Marshall, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Omar Bradley, George F. Patton, and Douglas MacArthur. On your drive to Laclede, you'll pass by a cluster of natural areas, each managed by a different state or federal agency, but all combined with the common goal of conservation. While in this area, we hope you will take time to visit Fountain Grove Wildlife Area, Pershing State Park, and Swan Lake National Wildlife Refuge, all accessible from this stretch of Highway 36. Just a few more miles down the road, you'll see a sign for the Locust Creek Covered Bridge. Built in 1868, this bridge once housed the nation's first transcontinental road, Route 8. Today, it's the longest of the four remaining bridges, measuring 151 feet. Turn north at the highway sign and drive 1 mile to get to the site's parking lot. A short quarter-mile gravel-covered walk will take you to the entrance of this historic gateway. Located midway between St. Joseph and Hannibal is the city of Brookfield. Like so many Midwestern communities, Brookfield came to life as the railroad made its way west. In 1859, because of its prime location, Major Josiah Hunt, the land commissioner for the Hannibal and St. Joseph Railroad, chose Brookfield to be the headquarters and shipping point for the first railway across the state. Brookfield retained its historic charm along Main Street and throughout downtown. Main Street puts the Twin Park, which has been and continues to be the central gathering place for Brookfield's community activities. It's here that families gather for concerts in the old gazebo, let the children play on the playground, and celebrate the season. This is also the site where each Labor Day weekend, crafts, a carnival, contest, and country music ignite the city in celebration of the Great Pershing Balloon Derby. From a large field just outside Brookfield, Dozens of colorful hot air balloons lift from the grasses and decorate the sky over Highway 36. The idea for the Derby was first launched in 1977 in order to raise funds for the General Pershing Museum. More than 30 years later, this festival still continues, and today an average of 45 massive balloons lift off from Pershing's old stomping ground, earning this festival the distinction of being the nation's longest-running event sanctioned by the Balloon Federation of America. In downtown Brookfield, the Linn County Historical Society established a new museum. In front of the museum, there is a stone that reads J.H. Tillman. This stone, called a mounting or lifting step, was used to help ladies get on horses or into buggies. There are 10 buggy steps that have been located throughout Brookfield. The museum provides visitors a map that locates these mounting steps and invites them to take a step back into history. Ahead is the town of Marceline, the boyhood home of one of the most famous visionaries in history. For Walt Disney, Marceline inspired his lifetime of accomplishments. He arrived here from Chicago when he was 4 years old and left for Kansas City when he was 9. But it was in those 5 years that he began his love of drawing and his career as an artist. It's here where his neighbor Doc Sherwood paid him to draw a picture of his horse, Rupert, for 25 cents. Walt Disney wrote of that day, saying, "All the way home, I walked on air, squeezing the quarters so tight it hurt. A wonderful thing had just happened. Someone had liked a drawing of mine well enough to buy it. Perhaps now I would really succeed in my ambition to be a cartoonist. Many honors and rewards have come my way, but none quite measure up to the thrill I felt on that memorable day in Marceline." It was in Marceline a young Walt saw his first motion picture, his first parade, and attended school for the first time. It's where he spent hours playing and resting under his dreaming tree on his beloved family farm, wishing, sketching, and imagining. Walt's original drawing of Disneyland was inspired by Marceline and included his family farm, where a young Walt made his first attempt in the show business with the Disney Family Circus. The admission was 10 cents, and the circus consisted of baffled cats and dogs dressed in baby clothes. The audience left unimpressed, and Walt returned the money. He had learned a valuable lesson: give the public more than they expect, a lesson that served him well the rest of his life. In 1950, Walt recreated the Marceline barn at his home in California and used it as his personal workshop. It became his happy place and the birthplace of Disney Imagineering. Today, when visiting the Disney farm, you will find his dreaming tree and the restoration of his family barn known as Walt's Happy Place. Marceline's Main Street, as Walt knew it, served as his inspiration for Main Street USA at Disneyland. Even today, when visiting Disneyland, you can purchase sweets at Marceline's Confectionery, have your photo taken at the Hotel Marceline, and ride on a train pulled by a steam locomotive named the E.P. Ripley. Walt had fond memories of playing as a child in E.P. Ripley Park, located in the heart of Marceline. Located on Main Street in Marceline is the Uptown Theater, where two Disney premieres have been held: The Great Locomotive Chase in 1956 with Walt and Roy Disney in attendance, and The Spirit of Mickey in 1998. You can also mail a postcard from the only federal building that boasts his name, the Walt Disney U.S. Post Office Building. A few blocks south, you can swim at the Walt Disney Pool he and his brother Roy dedicated in 1956. And be sure to see the murals Walt Disney created for the interior walls of the Walt Disney Elementary School. Inside a restored 1913 Santa Fe station with gifted artifacts from the Ruth Disney Beecher estate, the Walt Disney Hometown Museum exhibits a unique collection of family photos and papers where you can learn more about Walt's childhood and the family's time in Marceline. Walt Disney said,
"More things of importance happened to me in Marceline than have happened since, or likely to in the future."
21 miles south of Marceline on Highway 5 is Keatsville, the seat of Sheraton County, founded in 1833 by Methodist preacher James Keats. This is another Highway 36 town that can boast about being the boyhood home of a famous U.S. military general. Except Keatsville didn't have just one, but two. The first became a famous Civil War general, and the other played a major role in World War II and Vietnam. Keatsville was the adulthood home of Confederate General Sterling Price, the 11th governor of Missouri. Areas around Keatsville, settled by people of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia descent, were pro-Southern sympathizers. The General Sterling Price Museum highlights the life of Price and this area's Civil War history. In 1838, as a delegate from Sheraton County, he investigated the disturbances between Mormons and the anti-Mormons along the present-day west side of Highway 36. He reported that, in his opinion, the Mormons were not guilty of the grievances of which they were charged. Visitors can also tour the restored 1850 cabin that marks the site of Price's headquarters. A century later, General Maxwell Taylor, as commander of the 101 Airborne Division, was the first Allied general to parachute and land in France on D-Day. He became the Army Chief of Staff in 1955. Taylor was promoted to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1962 by President Kennedy and became the ambassador to South Vietnam by President Johnson from 1964 to 1965. Military generals aren't the only legends that came from Keatsville. It's also the home of sports star Cal Hubbard, the only person to be enshrined at both the Pro Football and Baseball Hall of Fame. Visitors can also tour an 1850 Presbyterian church and the 1906 County Jail Sheriff's Residence, both on the National Register. Swan Lake is a primary wintering area for between 10 and 80,000 Canadian geese. That's why Sumner, the town 1 mile north of the refuge entrance, is known by some as the wild goose capital of the world. The town city park features a giant goose statue, 40 feet tall with a wingspan of 65 feet. Maxi, named after the Latin name Granta canadensis maxima for giant Canada goose, is made of fiberglass rather than feathers. On windy days, the outspread wings lift and move and appear as if Maxie has decided to visit Swan Lake. Sumner has an annual goose festival on the third weekend of October to celebrate the return of their feathered friends. Just down the road from the giant goose, you can see a giant pecan, one that weighs 12,000 pounds. Brunswick is another town proud of nature's gift and its claim to fame as the pecan capital of Missouri. You can get to Brunswick 30 miles south of Highway 36, down Highway 11, and then east on Highway 24. 3 million pounds of pecans are harvested each year in Sheraton County. It's no rival to the 100 million pounds that the state of Georgia harvests each year, but Missouri pecan growers claim that their northern pecans are sweeter by nature. Their smaller size and higher oil content give them a sweeter, richer flavor than southern pecans. The thriving pecan industry near Highway 36 has been attributed to the ingenuity of the James family. George and Elizabeth James discovered a thin-shell pecan on their farm in 1947. George and Elizabeth James discovered a thin-shell pecan on their farm in 1947. By 1955, they had patented the Starking Hardy Giant, the pecan that began the boom in the pecan industry for this area. They started the Nut Hut, where travelers could stop by to taste those sweet pecans, and they built the world's largest pecan, 12 feet long with a 7-foot diameter. A famous local cheese that's been visited by numerous travelers across the nation. Today, their children have kept their family farm thriving. When business started to wane, the younger James wrote a children's story about pecans, and now they use it to perform a stage show for farm visitors. Today, 10,000 pecan trees cover the hills of James' pecan farm, a living family tribute, and the town celebrates with a pecan festival on the first weekend of every October. Back along Highway 36, about halfway between Brookfield and Macon, is the town of New Cambria. New Cambria, meaning New Wales, was established as a Welsh settlement in 1857. While Confederate General Sterling Price rallied his troops south of present-day Highway 36, Union troops rallied just north of the highway and battled Confederates in present-day New Cambria. In August 1862, the 1st Missouri Union Cavalry of about 1,500 men were attacked by about 400 Confederate troops near Painter Creek, northeast of town. Visitors can read about the Battle of Painter Creek from a memorial located in the city park. Just off Highway 36 is the New Cambria Livestock Auction Market. An alliance of more than one dozen Angus breeders meet here to buy and sell bulls, cows, and calves, and to share a pot of coffee at the Sale Barn Cafe. For those who would rather hunt for their food, drive 15 miles north to Route DZ and stay at the Heartland Wildlife Ranch. This ranch provides big game hunting on more than 6,000 acres and offers a beautiful lodge for relaxing. If you're more of an angler, travel to the Thomas Hill Reservoir Conservation Area that provides a 5,000-acre lake. This area is located 10 miles south on Route 3 to Caseyville and then east 2.5 miles on Route T. On your way to the lake, stop at the Caseyville store, which has been family-owned and operated for more than 140 years, to pick up necessities like lunch, bait, and a fishing license. Up ahead are the cities of Sevier and Macon. These cities and a cluster of others in this area grew up around large coal veins that gave life to these communities. The big black Sevier and Southern Steam Engine on display in Sevier City Park honors the thousands of miners that lived and worked in this town and boasts the railroad slogan, "Half Train Will Haul." Coal was discovered near Sevier in the 1850s, and it soon became the leading coal mining community in northern Missouri. In 1888, 700 miners were employed in 6 separate mines, which basically meant the entire population of the Sevier community worked in the mines. In the early 1900s, Sevier was the headquarters of the B&S Railroad, and 63 miles of track brought coal from other area mines to be shipped from Sevier to markets all across the Midwest. In 1982, the B&S Railroad made its last run down the track, and in the early 1990s, the last area coal mine was sealed after a century's worth of work. Downtown Sevier retains the history of its coal mining days. The Black Diamond building reminds people about what this precious fossil fuel was also known as. The pizza shops reflect the Italian immigrants who arrived here to work in these mines, with a gem in the area called the Pear Tree, an upscale restaurant with such a reputation that people travel here from miles around just to try their famous onion rings and enjoy an evening of fine dining in this little town that once commanded coal and commerce. Just past Sevier on the north side of Highway 36, is Long Branch Lake State Park. Just on the other side of the huge grassy hill that's visible from the highway is the 2,430-acre Long Branch Lake, welcoming boaters, anglers, and even beachgoers. The park has a visitor center, playgrounds, picnic shelters, and a campground. In late summer, trails weave through towering fields of bluestem, purple coneflower, black-eyed Susan, and other native plants and grasses that covered these hills when Native Americans lived here. Past the lake at the intersection of Highways 36 and 63 is Macon. Nestled in these rolling hills is a community rich in mobile, military, and medical history. Macon was the first community to offer rotary telephones to its residents, thanks to Native telephone tycoon Theodore Gary. Gary purchased the Macon Telephone Exchange in 1897. His company, Theodore Gary Company, merged with other telephone businesses throughout the years and is today a part of Verizon. Gary was also the first highway commissioner in Missouri. Located on the Mason-Dixon line, Mason was the Union Army's Missouri headquarters during the Civil War. When Colonel Frederick Wilhelm Victor Blease opened the Blease Military Academy in 1899, it was considered second only to West Point in stature. A wealthy man from Germany, Blease wanted to leave a legacy in this community. He lavishly designed the academic hall and gymnasium in Romanesque Revival-style architecture and managed a successful school until his death in 1906. After his death, the academy went bankrupt and the building was sold to the Andrew Taylor Steele family. They transformed it into the world's first osteopathic sanatorium hospital. The Steele Hildreth Sanatorium operated from 1914 to 1968. The Steele family was from Cooksville, just 35 miles north of Macon. To visit the Steele National Osteopathic Museum, travel north on Highway 63, along the road pioneers used to call the Bee Trace Trail. As the name suggests, there were honeybee colonies along this route. Honey was a prized sweetener to early settlers, and each fall they would follow the trail in search of it. On your way to Cooksville, you'll pass through La Plata, a town proud of its railroad days, past and present. The North Missouri Railroad rolled into La Plata in 1867. The Santa Fe Railroad from Chicago to Kansas City came through 20 years later. More than 100 years since then, and trains still roll along this route. In fact, La Plata is the only town in Missouri north of Kansas City with an active Amtrak depot. The town prides itself on its railroad routes and invites travelers to spot trains from its rail lookout cabin and visit its Amtrak History Museum on the grounds of the depot inn and suites. Two Amtrak baggage cars uniquely house the train memorabilia inside. La Plata is also home to the ingenious writer Lester Dent. Dent is most famous for writing the Doc Savage Adventure series between the years of 1933 and 1949. Under the pseudonym Kenneth Robeson. Doc Savage was one of the first action hero characters in our nation, who fought villains, oftentimes ones who wanted to take over the world. He would use creative spy gadgets that resemble modern-day inventions like answering machines and night vision goggles, and was also called the Man of Bronze. This character influenced the superhero and adventure hero characters that would later burst into comic books, novels, and movies. Characters such as Indiana Jones, James Bond, Batman, and the Man of Steel himself. Dent was born in La Plata in 1904, left in the middle of his life when he began his writing career, and returned back in 1940. He died of a heart attack in 1959 and is buried in La Plata.